Tonight I'd like to discuss fourth parak of Avos Mishnah Zayin, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Al ta'asem atara lehiskadel behem. Do not make Torah, the words of Torah, a crown to make yourself great. Lo kardom lachtoch behem. Torah should not be an axe that you use to cut with. V'kach hoya Hillel Omer, and Hillel would say, Ud yishtamish betoga cholef, one who would use the crown of Torah will perish. Hakol hana'os midivrei Torah, nota chayav min ha'olam. If someone benefits from divrei Torah, he takes his life from the world. And Rabbeinu Yonah explains the Mishnah, Al ta'asem atara lehiskadol behem. Torah should not be a crown that you use to give yourself honor and greatness in this world. If your intent is for kavod haTorah is fine. You're allowed to give kavod to Torah. But if the Chacham wants personal kavod, that's wrong. And you should not make Torah into your axe with which to cut, meaning to say, you shouldn't gain financially from Torah. It's not a business, so to speak. It's not a tool of a trade, Torah. And therefore, it should not be a kardom lachtoch. That's the metaphor. One who uses the crown of Torah for his personal benefit will perish. Whoever's nana from divrei Torah takes his life from the world. The Gemara brings a story by Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon was once suspected of taking something which wasn't his. It's a question of stealing. And they put him in a sack. And I think what happened is maybe the robbers caught him and he could have paid his way out, but instead they were to take him and drown him, and he cried out, "Oy, what's going to be the Tarfon?" And when they heard that this is a Tarfon, they let him go. And he felt bad that he was used the Kesser of Torah. They let him go because that he was the great Reb Tarfon. He could have just said, "Here's money, leave me alone." And they would have let him go. So he felt he benefited from the Torah by saying, "Oy, lo the Tarfon." And the Gemara brings that story that a person should not, if he can get out of it, and in this case he could have paid his way, so he shouldn't have used the fact that he was a man of Torah to get out of that. The idea that the Mishnah is conveying, Torah is meant to be studied for the sake of Torah, lishma, and it's not meant to be used as a tool, it's not meant to be as a vehicle to achieve greatness and prestige. I heard someone speak this past Shabbos, and he was describing how the Aron had a zer, had a crown going around the top. The parasha describes the Kalim, Parshas Truma, and there's a zer, zahav, on the Aron, on the Shulchan, on the Mizbech, Apnimi. And we talk about the three crowns, Keser Torah, Keser Machos, Keser Kahuna. And the crown on the Aron represents Keser Torah. The way the Torah describes the zer on the Aron, there was a golden box and a wooden box and another golden box, so the wood's inside the two gold. And the outermost box had this little trim going around it, like a molding, the zer. The kapoiris fit snugly over the box of the Aron in that crown. That crown was basically like the lip surrounding the kapoiris. The kapoiris rested on it with the kruvim. And once the kapoiris was placed in the Aron, so only a little bit of the crown of the zer rose above. Rashi says a mashahu, a little bit the kolshu, a little bit rose above the kapoiris. Whereas by the Shulchan, I think it was a tefach, it was a big thing. And by the Mizbech as well. But here by the Aron, there was a zer, zahav, a crown going around, but it was very small. So the speaker was saying there's a lesson to be learned, and the lesson is that those who are endowed with the crown of Torah, those who learn Torah and study Torah, should not be haughty and arrogant because of it, and therefore the crown is very small. It's a nice thought, and I went to him afterwards and I said, you know, your idea is expressed in a Klei Yachar. The Klei Yachar points out that of all the Kalim, the Aron has dimensions that are all halves. 2.5, 1.5. There's no whole number describing the Aron's length, width, and height. The other Kalim, there's whole and fractions. By the Aron, it's all fractions. 2.5 and 1.5, so that's it. Klei Yachar says, the reason for that is, when it comes to Keset Torah, you should never think you have everything. You'll never have a whole number. You'll never be complete. There's always more to learn. Become alam de hiskalti. You can learn from other people. There's always more to achieve. There's always more to do. You know, the greater the person is in Torah, the more they realize how little they know, and so on. So that's why everything's in fractions. So this idea that a person who's endowed with the Keset Torah has to not hold himself haughtily, really, you can find it in the dimensions of the Aron, in the fact that it's described in halves, 1.5, 2.5. Personally, I didn't tell him, what do I think the reason why the Zer is so small? Why is there a small crown on the Aron? Because the crown always represents Kavod and Gedula. The crown represents greatness, honor. And you should know that when it comes to Keset Torah, don't think you're going to get such great honor and Kavod when you have Torah. And you shouldn't be learning for the Kavod and honor. That's not why you learn it. You don't learn Torah lehisgadolbo. You don't learn Torah to receive Kavod. To me, that's why the Zer was very miniature, very small. The dimensions of the Aron tell us to be humble, but ultimately the idea of how to use the crown, what the crown represents, for Torah, that's not the main thing. The essence of the Mishnah that we don't use Torah, Torah is not a tool, raises all kinds of questions that the poskim discuss concerning earning money or being paid money to learn Torah. Whether it's someone in Kollel receiving a stipend, whether it's someone who is learning Torah and is going to get a degree based on his learning, like a bachelor's of Talmudic law, or a doctorate of Talmudic law. And then there are various, contest/grant. There are grants, financial grants given to people who submit articles in Torah. And it's a little bit of a contest because there's only a limited number of grants. A lot of people apply for these grants. So people submit their Torah for these grants. And is that permitted? Are you benefiting from Torah? Are you using Torah for your own benefit? And these questions are discussed in Poskim. It's well known that the Rambam wrote that anyone who is learning Torah should not think that he can ignore his responsibility to support his family and should not rely on community charity to be supported. The Rambam wrote that very clearly. And the Beis Yosef has a very lengthy comment on the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah, where he shows that Klai Yisrael always supported the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva did not work when they were Rosh Yeshiva. The Rambam gives a whole list of Tanoim who all had jobs and professions. And Kesef Mishnah says, yeah, that was before they were Rosh Yeshiva. When they were Rosh Yeshiva, they weren't working anymore. And throughout the generations, it's been accepted that there's nothing wrong with the community supporting people to sit and learn. If they wouldn't, we would not have Torah scholarship on the level that we need to provide us with leadership and guidance in all areas of Torah. So therefore, this has been going on for hundreds of years. This is not a new phenomenon. The idea of bringing a kollel on these shores of the United States was something new, and Rabban Cutler pushed for that and strove and created the whole phenomena that we see today. But the concept of community supporting Rabbanim, or supporting people in Torah, does go back hundreds and hundreds of years. And again, the poskim discuss, what about the Mishnah? Doesn't the Mishnah say, lo kardum lachtoch behem? And the poskim explain that the goal isn't purely that I'm learning Torah for the sake of earning money, I'm learning Torah for the sake of profit. They're learning Torah because they love learning Torah. They're learning Torah for Torah's sake, but you can't live unless you have someone supporting you. You need some backing. You need the connection of machzike Torah with the loimde Torah, and that's not prohibited from the Mishnah. That's how the poskim look at it. The Mishnah is not talking about people who learn Torah for the sake of Torah and are being supported to do so. Rather, it's talking about people who use Torah towards an end other than Torah itself. So I'll give you an example, a modern example that you may have heard me mention in the past that I think is an example of what the Mishnah was saying not to do. There is a group of people, not large, but it's enough to get attention, that are pushing for women to be capable of answering shailas that are relevant to women, and whether or not it crosses the line of making women rabbonim or not, doesn't have to, but these are Orthodox women who study Torah on a very high level. They have batei medrash, they have kolim, they have shiurim, and these women are being trained to be, either they call themselves yoatzot, like advisors to other women. And again, it's not a very large group, but there's definitely that segment. I mean, there are today women in the Orthodox world with tefillin and talis and all that stuff. And they call themselves Orthodox, and they feel that this is their way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. And they feel that women don't ask shailas of male rabbis. They're embarrassed to ask shailas. But if you have a woman who's capable of answering the shailas, so then they can be helpful. And these women study material that are never taught in Beis Yaakov. They study Gemara. They study Shulchan Aruch. And tshuvas and all kinds of things to be proficient in Jewish law. And when I think about, so like, what's wrong with this picture? Like, what's wrong with these ladies in Kollel? What's wrong with women doing this? And on the surface, it could be nothing wrong with it. There's no aveira per se for a woman to learn Torah. The Rambam says you don't teach Torah shal peh to women, to girls, if they don't want to learn it. You don't force them to learn it. If they want to learn on their own, there have always been women who are knowledgeable in Torah shal peh. There have always been women who've learned on their own, and they're allowed to learn on their own. If they want to pick up a sefer and learn, it's not off limits, they are allowed to learn. And they've always been knowledgeable women. That's not something new in Klai Yisrael. What is new is the true motive of these groups that I'm talking about. And when I read the literature concerning these groups, ultimately, the real goal is for women to be equal to men. They're looking for a degree of equality. Because as long as men know the Torah more than the women, if men know the halacha, they are put in a position of superiority over women. Women have to rely on them. And that's not fair. Why can't women be just as proficient in these halachas as men? After all, you have women who are physicians, you have women who are surgeons. Can't a woman master a section of Shulchan Aruch that talks about halacha that's relevant to women? And therefore, they are studying these things to be equals with male rabbonim and male poskim. And to me, that becomes, don't take Torah to be a kardum lachtoch bo. Because they're not learning Torah purely for the sake of learning Torah and the love of Torah, because there's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, I'm sure maybe even in seminary you've come across some of these women who really know a lot of Torah. And they learn Torah because they love Torah. And they want to learn more, they want to know more, they want to teach it. That's fine. the women I'm talking about are not necessarily learning because they love learning. I mean, I imagine it's geschmack, because Torah is mesamech, Torah is exhilarating, but their motive, the goal behind the whole process, is that they shouldn't be inferior to men. They feel that right now they are inferior, and if we learn Torah, then we'll be equals. That is using Torah for something other than what it was intended for. To me, that's a modern example of lo kardum lachto pahem. You don't take the Torah and make it into your axe. If you have an expression as an axe to grind, you have an issue with the fact that women sit behind the machitza, you have an issue that women can't daven for the amid, you have an issue that women don't wear tefillin and women don't wear talis, all right, they have to deal with your issues. If you're angry at God, so Rav Moshe says that's kfira. Rav Moshe writes such people who are angry at Hashem because of these things, that kaifer. They basically are denying our Messiah, denying our teachings, and so on. If a person learns Torah because they love to learn Torah, there's nothing wrong with that. If a person wants to learn Torah so they can be equal to the men in their society, that's an abuse of what Torah is for. That's karadun lachlepem. That's, in my mind, an example of what this is referring to. The Mishnah says, kol hanaos midifei Torah not achayiv in ha'olam. If a person wants to benefit from the Torah and use it for their own gain, so they take themselves from this world. Now, the Rabbeinu Yoina tells us that if someone brings a gift, the Gemara says in Ksubis, if someone gives a gift to Talmid Chacham, it's as if he's makriv bikur. It's as if he's bringing a carbon. So Rabbeinu says, there's nothing wrong with people giving gifts to an Adam Chashuv, and that's a common thing. And in fact, the Gemara says there are two types of people. There are those like Elisha Hanavi, who was willing to take, when he went from town to town, he would stay at people's homes and he would take from them. And then there are people like Shmuel HaNavi, he wouldn't take. He would go wherever he went, he'd burn his own stuff with him. And there's different approaches, and they're both valid. They're both okay. There's nothing wrong with either one. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that for someone to be the recipient of someone's support in an ordinary way that's done for Adam Chashuv, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And there are people who would help to meet the Chachamim, and that's fine. The issue is more pertinently when a person is using, like we said before, to achieve honor, to achieve fame, to achieve wealth. That's not the intent. If anything, we see the other way around. The ones who support Torah study are often blessed with wealth. The Kalim, again, back to the Kalim in the Mishkan. We have the Shulchan, and the Shulchan represents Parnosa, wealth, Hashirus, and we refer to also, we said before, Kesa Malchus. The Menorah didn't have a Kesa, didn't have a crown, didn't have a Zer. But we know the Menorah represents Chochmah, deep understanding of Torah. The Gemara says in Bar Basra, if someone wants to become wise, he should daven Shmona Esrei, leaning, facing a little to the south. Even though we daven east, we daven towards Yerushalayim, but you bend a little bit, you turn yourself a little bit to the south if you want to be a Chacham. And if you want to be wealthy, you position yourself a little to the north. And the Gemara says it's like the Menorah and the Shulchan. Because the Menorah was placed in the south of the Heichal, and the Shulchan was placed in the north of the Heichal. So someone who wants to be wealthy faces the side of the Shulchan. Someone who wants to be smart, a Chacham, faces the side of the Menorah. So Menorah is to the Dharm, to the south, and the Shulchan's to the north, One is for chachma, one is for ashivas, for wealth. The pasuk says that the menorah and the shulchan were facing each other. You would place the shulchan noichach hamenorah. The shulchan has to be opposite the menorah. And the pasuk also says the menorah was placed opposite the shulchan. You have both lashonis, both terminologies. The shulchan is opposite the menorah is opposite the shulchan. So they face off, so to speak. If you ever saw the pictures of the Heichal, so the menorah and the shulchan are facing each other, and the mizbeach is in the center, but pulled a little bit away towards the east, away from the shulchan and the menorah. So shulchan are facing each other, and the mizbeach apnimi is in the center, but not a little bit pulled away from between the two. So the expression that the shulchan is facing the menorah and the menorah is facing the shulchan, the Mefarshim point out, I believe the Tziv says this, perhaps others as well, that we have a klal, we learned before, im ein kemach ein tera. Without panasa, there's no learning. You have to have panasa. Without panasa, you can't learn. And for this reason, in the psukim of the building of the shulchan always precede the psukim of making the menorah. The shulchan comes before the menorah. You have to have parnasa before you have Torah. Again, we talk about the Aron as Kesa Torah, but the menorah as well is the Chachmas HaTorah, someone to differentiate Torah, Shevachsav, Torah, Shebal Peh. In any event, you can't have Torah without Kemach. So you start off with the shulchan. Shulchan is built first. Opposite the shulchan, you have to have a menorah. Because if you don't have a menorah, what's the purpose of your parnasa? Ein Torah, ein Kemach. What's the purpose of your parnasa if you don't have Torah? So you start with the shulchan, make sure the menorah is opposite. And then it says, the menorah is opposite the shulchan. So I'm going to say that that means if someone does support Torah, someone does provide for the chachamim to learn, then in turn, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give them a bracha in their parnasa, and they'll be able to achieve ashivus. Because if they use their money properly, and part of that is the support of Torah, so then he will become wealthy. And that's a chus. So it's like it starts with the shulchan, it goes to the menorah, it goes back to the shulchan. And that's the way the Torah describes it. You make the shulchan opposite the menorah opposite the shulchan. So you have to have parnasa. Without parnasa, you can't have Torah. And if someone is willing to support someone to learn and provide for him so he could be focused totally on learning, so that's perfectly fine. That's not running afoul of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is only referring to someone whose pursuit is pursuit of title. He wants to be called rabbi. He wants to be called honor and prestige. And that is not what learning Torah is about. We don't learn Torah for those purposes. The very next Mishnah, Mishnah Ches, Rabbi Yosi Omer, Kol Machaber Es HaTorah, Guf Mechubar Al Abiyos. If someone gives cover to the Torah, so he will be honored. Kol Machalas HaTorah, if someone does not give cover to Torah, Guf Mechubar Al Abiyos, then he will not be honored. And Rabbi Yosi says, what's cover to Torah? Don't leave a sefer on the floor. If you see a sefer that fell down, you pick it up. You don't sit on a bench, if there are svarim on the same bench as you, make sure to pick it up. You shouldn't be sitting together on the bench of the sefer. And if someone is careful to give cover to Torah and those who learn Torah, so a person gives cover to people who deserve it, so to speak, in this context, so he'll be mechubar also. Min hashamayim misayin oso. This comes from Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam will make it that he'll be honored by others because he's mechaved the Torah. And if chas v'shalom, he's not mechaved the Torah, and he has shows no respect for the Torah, so then he will not be respected either. He'll be mechul, and this is again min hashamayim. Now, the concept of giving cover to the Torah, understanding the value of the Torah, understanding the specialness of the Torah, If a person does that, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure that he receives kavod as well. He's deserving of kavod. Someone who does not recognize the significance of Torah, so then he's going to be mechulal al-bias. So I would suggest that the two Mishnayos kind of go together, I guess the different Tanoim. If someone takes Torah and uses it as an atar lehisgadol behem, essentially, he's not interested in giving kavod to Torah. He's interested in receiving his own kavod from the Torah. If someone is mechal the Torah, if someone to him, Torah is a vehicle, it's a tool, it's a means to an end, gufa mechul al-bias, in the end, he's not going to have kavod. He's not going to achieve his goal. If someone is mechabed Torah, if someone understands the importance of Torah, someone understands the value of Torah, so that person will eventually also, min ha-shamayim, receive kavod. We have an expression of kavod ha-Torah. The Rabbeinu Yonah says, kavod ha-Torah is not to see a sitter on the floor, a sefer on the floor, and walk by. You pick it up. Rabbeinu Yonah says, don't sit on a chair with a sefer Torah on the chair. Take the sefer off the chair. But kavod ha-Torah goes way beyond that. First of all, kavod ha-Torah includes making sure that the place where Torah is studied is beautiful. I know when I was in yeshiva, they were very makbid, the lights overhead in the Beis Medrash. You never have lights that were out. You know, you have a room with, I don't know, 100 fixtures of light bulbs, maybe more. It's a lot of bulbs. It's a big Beis Medrash. And bulbs, they will go out. The fluorescent lights, they're always makbid, never to leave areas unlit, bulbs that were out. They felt that's a lack of kavod ha-Torah. You don't have Beis Medrash with bulbs out. And not everyone has this sensitivity, but that was the chinuch that I had in Baltimore, and they say this comes back to Slobodka. In Slobodka, they're very makbid on showing kavod ha-Torah in such ways. The mantle on a sefer Torah should be beautiful. That's kavod ha-Torah. You've covered the Torah, it should be a nice mantle. It's kavod ha-Torah, your svarim should be taken care of. You don't abuse svarim. The one svarim you use should be taken care of nicely, placed nicely. If I walk into a Beis Medrash, I see the svarim on the shelves in total disarray, it feels a lack of kavod ha-Torah. You go and straighten out the svarim. The svarim shouldn't be tipping on each other and falling out and bent. The svarim should be in order. Putting the svarim in order is kavod ha-Torah. The room should be clean. The Beis Medrash should be a clean room. It's just all kavod ha-Torah. I imagine in seminaries they teach the concept to girls of kavod ha-Torah, which is a little harder concept. What does it mean to a girl, kavod ha-Torah? What does it mean to a woman, kavod ha-Torah? So it means you stand up when a Talmid Chacham comes in, so that's giving kavod. Good, that's kavod ha-Torah. It is. It is kavod ha-Torah. Another element of kavod ha-Torah is if a Talmid Chacham comes to a city to speak, so the signs usually say, Tenu kavod ha-Torah, give kavod to the Torah, come and listen to this person speak. And sometimes it's challenging to do that, but it's going to be very worthwhile. Either you don't understand everything that's being said, but there's definitely the kavod ha-Torah component. I guess the ultimate kavod ha-Torah on a woman's part is going to be how she relates with her husband when it comes to Torah. And some women want to marry a Talmid Chacham, and you could argue that that's a recognition of the kavod of Torah, you know, that itself is a kavod of Torah. Some women want to marry someone who's only learning, and that's could be an element of the kavod of Torah, but even if he's working. Someone who's working and he learns, there's also kavod of Torah. There's also kavod of Torah in the fact that he's going to learn and to make it as easy as possible for that to happen. I know that Rabbi Rothbard often mentions that he can't stand when women say, I let my husband go to learn at night, or I let my husband go to a shir. So what does that mean, you let your husband go? Do you let him breathe? Do you let him eat? Going to learn Torah is not optional. It's not like going to play golf. I let my husband go play golf on Wednesdays. It's not the same thing. Letting my husband go to learn? What do you mean let your husband go to learn? There are women who insist their husbands go learn. They wouldn't have it any other way. They let them go learn. They do anything they can to make sure that their husbands can go learn and get out at night. Even if it could be difficult at home and there are so many things to be done with the children and homework and putting to bed. But if a woman has kavod haTorah, one could picture her saying to her husband, I'll take care of this and you go learn. And it's not that she is letting him go learn. Rather, she's facilitating, encouraging. And if someone is mechaber the Torah, so gufa mechubad, so that person will receive their own kavod as well, mina shamayim. If someone doesn't realize the value of learning, doesn't realize the value of the study of Torah, and they look at studying Torah as the same as going bowling with the guys, so then that's essentially mechalas a Torah. They don't realize the value of Torah, and it's put down, and that person is guf mechal abrius. So Torah does have a crown. There is an atara. There is a zer on the aron. There is a crown of Torah. There is. We don't learn Torah for the crown. We don't learn Torah for the kavod. We don't learn Torah as a tool. We don't learn Torah as a means to gain something. But if we recognize the importance of Torah, the value of Torah, the prominence of Torah, the significance of Torah, and so on, and therefore we respect it and honor it and engage in it and study it and learn it and delve in it, so that's the person who's mechubad al abrius. So if a person doesn't, like he says, soft, al tasan atar l'skaldabem, l'kardim l'achdabem, then you'll get it. You'll have the crown. You'll have the gedula. You'll have the kavod. All of that will come, maybe not in huge dimensions, maybe not as noticeable, but ultimately it's there, and you'll have mechubad al habiyas. Someone who doesn't properly treat Torah correctly, someone who abuses Torah, doesn't use Torah the way it's meant to be used, so that person is going to suffer the mechubad al habiyas. So that person is not mechab the Torah, so he's mechal the Torah. Person is chasol, mechal the Torah, so in that we say gufa mechubad al habiyas. But this doesn't mean a person can't take a stipend from Kollel. It doesn't mean a person can't receive a grant from Torah. And again, the Poskim who allow it, they may point out it may not be the highest level of Lishma, but ultimately we have no choice. You know, the way the world we live in today, the only way to achieve greatness in Torah is to be focused exclusively on Torah. This doesn't mean it's for everybody. But for the ones who do it, we're not going to say, well, why don't you get a job and be self-sufficient and learn a few hours a day. Because if they did, then you won't have anyone who was proficient in Torah to the degree that we need. The only way to achieve that is a total focus and a reliance on others. And ultimately, that's permitted. And again, I'm sure all of you know that part of the way the system is today is that not only do people receive stipends for learning, but a lot of support comes from a woman working. If a wife chooses to work to help support her family so her husband can learn, that's also called mechaber es haTorah. I can't think of any greater kavod haTorah than that. Why should a woman have to go out and work? That's not ideal. Ideally, a woman should be home, raising her family. I know that it's not always an option. And even in families where husbands work, many families cannot make it unless the wife works as well. That's a very common phenomenon we have today. But the whole notion that a fellow would sit and learn and his wife would work is contrary to Pirkei Avos, is contrary to, you know, the Mishnah says, Bana Bayis, Leita Karen, V'achachisa Isha. You have to have a house, you have to have a panos, and then get married. That was the normal system. We don't live normally, we don't live in normal times. It's not the way it was supposed to be. The whole concept of the Ksuba is what a person is required to provide for his spouse, not vice versa. And yet, we see the reality is differently in many places. So, the pshat is, that's something that a woman accepts upon herself. There's not something she has to do, something she wants to do. So if there's something she wants to do, that's again, that's called mechaber es haTorah. Recognizing the importance of Torah, the greatness of Torah, and therefore the willingness to do what she has to do to allow her husband to not be distracted by panosah, So that's, of course, again, an example of Kol Mechaber Satora, where we say Gufa Mechubar Al Abrius.